Hey, everybody. It's episode 444. It's a hallmark, I guess. Three fours? I don't know. Episode 3-4s. I'm your host, James Jones. With me today, Mr. John Lindemann.
James, it's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you, John. Do you have 3-4s?
Fo-fo-de-foe.
There we go. Good save. That's not in any way, shape, or form awful. Also joining us, Mr. Guillaume Vaillette.
444 is such a unique number, and so is 445 and 446.
Thank you.
There's only going to ever be one of those episodes.
Well, so. I don't know. If John's running a Twitter account, there might be another one. Last of this week, Greg has embraced himself, ensconced himself, really, in the return of NFL football, so he could not join us this week. But instead, we are joined by our friend, Mr. Ren McNulty.
I'm the one who doesn't care about football.
Well, you and Guillaume.
Okay.
Yeah.
Hi, Guy.
Yeah. Hey. We're going to talk about football for the next 2 hours. The two of you can go do whatever you want to do. Soren's been on the show. Soren's been on the show before, but just as a real quick introduction, Soren is the, I guess, sole proprietor and staff member of the video game development studio Four Corner Games. Mm-hmm. Makers of I've Got to Run, and I'm blanking on what the other game is that you're working on.
That I'm working on.
Yeah.
Monochrono.
Yes, which is coming out next year now, officially?
Yeah, next year, when it's done, kind of. But, yeah, it's coming out to PC, Mac, Linux, the suite, basically. PS3, PS4, PS Vita, Xbox One, Wii U, and investigating Engage. Apple TV.
Excellent. But additionally, to give more context to the show, you are also a professional journalist.
Oh, journalist is strong. I don't do much news covering. More All revealing. Right.
Video game writer for a newspaper. Is that better?
Yep. I play everything.
Which is good, because you're leading off new business this week. And
yeah.
You've got some stuff that we might not talk about on the show otherwise.
Yeah. Okay. For context, this is Animal Crossing Happy Home Designer, except because you don't get to go explore the town, you're only in the town when you're in or around someone's house, like in their front yard. I just call it Animal Crossing Happy House Arrest.
There we go.
Because it's kind of what the game feels like. Disclosure, I really don't like this game, so if you're going to get offended by that, skip forward about 10 minutes.
Oh, don't worry. People don't get offended by us, or they do, and we just don't care. It's fine.
The game was great for the first 45 minutes.
You're playing the Japanese version, correct?
Japanese version, well, alt English, yes, but officially I'm talking about the Japanese version, which
yes.
I have put 14 hours into because I hate myself. So I'll just walk you through the core gameplay loop.
Sure.
So you start the day, and you start at work, which is Tom Nook has continued his pursuits in the real estate business and now is the sole proprietor of anyone who wants to live in a house. So an animal will come up to you, or rather you'll go out onto Main Street and you'll talk to an animal who's like, hey, I'm gonna move in, I need a house, can you help decorate it for me? And then you say yes. And then you have a sit down with them and they say, well, I want it to, you know, be homey, like give it like a homey cabin feel. And so you're like, okay, your house is going to have two rooms. These are the two rooms. And then you're immediately transported to that house. And that villager has three pieces of furniture. That's all they own. Every villager has three pieces of furniture.
Good.
That you can see in a checklist. And then you unbox them, and then you talk to the villager, and the villager says, that's great! This is the best house I've ever seen! I'm so glad that you designed it so well! And then you get full marks, and then you go home to work, and you file a report, which saves and progresses to the next day. There's no real time, there's no exploring the village. You choose where in the village, the very large village, the villager will live, but there's no persistency, so you can effectively stack every single house in the exact same spot forever, and the houses always disappear the second you're not looking at them. So there's no persistence.
Good.
And yeah, you can go and fully decorate this house. You can you know, decorate their front yard. You can put plants and trees everywhere. But you get the exact same line of dialogue if you just open their three boxes. Because the game seems to be focused around participation awards, in that you cannot fail. There is no...
Sounds like America to me.
There's not only no fail state, there is no non-perfect state.
Finally, an Animal Crossing game for millennials. Is that what you're saying?
Geez. Most of our listener base, Guillaume. Come on.
Nice.
Come on.
Only way that you can have the villager be unhappy is if you threw away one of their three possessions, in which case you just buy it back and there's no currency, so everything is free.
That sounds like my experience with moving companies.
Yeah, you just order another one if the moving company threw your stuff away. They will give a shocked emotion if they see you throw it in the trash can, but that's about it. If you haven't taken it out of the box, as long as you have taken out of the box their three things, whatever eclectic mix it is, and you set them somewhere inside of their house, perfect.
So this is Animal Crossing Sisyphean nightmare home designer. So let me ask, how do you get to pick what villagers you're working with?
Okay, welcome to the wonderful world of Amiibo.
Oh, we're already here.
Oh, no.
So there are 400 Amiibo cards split up into four different waves. And if you only care about 10 villagers, you have two options. You can, one, keep playing for hours and hours and hours until the random number generator works in your favor, and that villager appears on Main Street, and you can and they're looking to move in. Or you could give Nintendo a lot of money and buy blind bags of Amiibo cards in the hope that you get a card of the villager you want, in which case you can scan in. And the sole function is to rig the random number generator and let you work with that villager that day. But because you don't get to, there's no persistence, there's really no point, because you can't go into town and visit them or see their house or anything. So they work just like any other villager.
I feel a sudden desire to not care about the world anymore.
However, the Animal Crossing characters that you're actually familiar with, like Tom Nook, Tortimer, Maribel, Isabel, all these characters, you can only take them on as your clients if you own the rare Amiibo cards, which are way rarer than the rest. There's guaranteed one per pack, although you're probably just going to get the uncommon ones, like Timmy Nook. The packs in the US are going to be $5.99 each. It's going to have five commons and uncommons and one special card.
Oh, dear God.
That is some predatory shit.
In Japan, there are packs of three, which doubles your rate of getting the specials, but they sold out so fast that Wave 2 has been delayed indefinitely so that Nintendo can start up a rerun of Wave 1.
God help us all. This is the future of Nintendo's fucking Animal Crossing cards. If you have the Animal Crossing Amiibo, the actual figures...
The figures.
Yeah, the Animal Crossing series figures. Do those count like the cards? So if I went and bought the Tortimer Amiibo and I tapped it, would I get to do his house, or is it different than the card?
So they've said the support is in there, but they haven't said what the support is, so I assume not.
Unknown at this point.
Unknown at this point, because the figures aren't out anywhere in the world. However, if you're one of the five people in the world like me who own the Super Smash Bros. Villager Amiibo, you get a gold statue as a reward for paying $600 for a figurine of the Animal Crossing human. And outside of your character, that is the only remnant of humanity in this world. So what I did is, and I tweeted this, there was a villager who just had wallpaper, carpet, and a table. And so I used the wallpaper, I used the carpet, and I put the table down in the corner. And every inch, every pixel of their house and yard is just the statue. Except for one mat that they can kneel down on at the entryway. So I effectively created a shrine to mankind that this villager will now worship forever because they're incapable of opening their moving boxes, let alone reorganizing their house.
Dear Lord. So this is truly Animal Crossing Nihilism Edition. Is there anything at all rewarding about this game? Like, is there anything positive to say?
I would have said yes at the announcement because I saw all this coming, but what I didn't see coming was that this was going to be a full retail game. Because I figured, okay, it's going to require Amiibo, so that's how you're monetizing it, and it's going to be a free eShop download. Animal Crossing New Leaf on 3DS, which is a full Animal Crossing game, launched at $34.99 in the US. Happy House Arrest is $40 in the US.
Does it come with the portal?
No, the version with the portal is $60 in the US. and that reader writer is necessary for anyone who doesn't have a new 3DS XL or buys the new Nintendo 3DS non-XL bundle, which comes bundled with the game for $220, which is $20 more than the new 3DS XL. And there's Animal Crossing Amiibo cards four waves.
I give up.
This game is so heavily monetized, it makes me ill.
And we're going to move on to another game that is leveraged heavily with Toys to Life.
Yes, but this Toys to Life, while it is more expensive, is more respectful.
Yeah, it's not really so much Toys to Afterlife.
No, this is Toys to Life, not Toys to Afterlife. Thanks, John. There's your episode title.
Ding, 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 ding.
The other game that we've been teasing around is Disney Infinity 3.0 Edition. If you're unfamiliar with Disney Infinity, which means you've never gone to a store,
I feel like we can keep pretty high level. I'm guessing most of our audience has been inundated with the Disney Media Blitz.
Yeah, there's been like, I think they've posted to their YouTube channel 10 different TV commercials that they're running simultaneously right now. So you've probably heard of this game, but in case you haven't, it's basically Toys to Life. You have a USB base and there are two main parts. There's play sets, which is going to be the bulk of what I talk about. And there's Toy Box, which is where most players spend most of their time. It's basically Minecraft Little Big Planet. You can create these worlds using all sorts of Disney items and toys and construction blocks, and you can make games with them. There are templates where you can just say, hey, I want to create a race, like a racing game, but laying down all the environment and the racetrack is really tedious. Make the racetrack for me, and it'll just make it for you. And then you can just go on to the actual fun customization parts. So they've done a really good job, and they're constantly highlighting crazy talented new games that creators are making. And like some of the toy boxes that they just upload for free take like 2 to 3 hours to complete.
Oh.
And they're, like, really high quality.
But those aren't locked behind Infinity figures.
If you have one figure, which in order to get the game, you have to have at least two. If you have one figure, you can use any figure in just about any toy box. It's possible that they can lock it behind a specific character. For instance, there's currently a level they're promoting that's like an ice mountain with like an... You're infiltrating an ice fortress, and you have to be one of the characters from Frozen. Mm. But outside of that, no, you can pretty much use any character in any toy box. And so the initial investment gets you basically endless content with the toy box book.
Cool.
That said, I have not been spending most of my time yet in 3.0 with that because... And this is going to be a controversial statement, and I'm sure I'm going to,
There won't be a lot of Disney Infinity defenders listening to the show, so you could say what you need to say.
I know. What I'm saying is that this might be one of my games of the year.
Oh, whoa. I know you've told me that, but I have to act sound surprised there.
Yeah. No.
Whoa.
again, this is as of right now. Games like Fallout 4 haven't come out yet. Games like Halo 5, etc. You know, Just Cause 3, big games that I'm going to obviously play because it's my job. But as of right now, having played Super Mario Maker, having played Xenoblade Chronicles X, this is easily in my top five.
But have you played Devil's Third?
I have.
Oh, okay. Never mind then.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. I mean, rebuke.
Don't even joke. Don't even joke about that game being good.
Don't worry. No one is making jokes about Devil's Third.
Not anymore. Not since Devil's Third out of 10 got taken. So, no. Disney Infinity 3.0 is largely Star Wars themed. So,
like its predecessor was largely Marvel themed.
Yes. And all of the figures from 1.0 and 2.0 work in 3.0. The playset, like, pieces don't load up the playsets because at that point the game would be like 40 gigs by now if it included all the previous playset data.
Right.
Because there's a lot of voice acting and level design and assets and stuff that are just not present. But all the figures get updated with every new game. So the big addition to this is that Ninja Theory, creators of games like Enslaved, Odyssey to the West, Heavenly Sword, and most recently DMC Devil May Cry, came in and completely overhauled the entire combat engine for every single character. So now there's aerial launchers, multiple finishers, every character has a full ranged attack that has its own set of finishers. There's
intro to character action.
Yeah. Well, no.
No?
No, because if you crank there's seven, like five or six different difficulty modes, and if you crank it up all the way, you're basically playing DMC Devil May Cry, but on hard mode. So it can get really tricky, and they do the typical Ninja Theory thing, and character action game thing of, okay, we're late in the game, you've learned how to deal with all of these enemies, but have you learned to deal with one that has a shield that needs to be pulled away, one that flies that needs all of their attacks reflected, and one that will guard and counterattack every hit you do unless you've launched him into an aerial combo. Like, can you do these three at once, okay? Can you do these three at once while there's also a boss battle going on?
Right, just slowly increasing the complexity of what they ask you to do.
Yes, and they do it softer than, DMC Devil May Cry, for instance. But it feels so good to play as a character like Ahsoka Tano, who I don't have any connection to, but she has, two lightsabers, and her big special is that she can use the force to swing them around in a giant circle around her a bunch of times, and basically do a huge spinning attack against nearby enemies. To do that, and then attack, which launches you across the field within two frames, so you're just basically immediately over there. Then you just launch them up into the air, juggle them, slam them down into the other enemy, which stuns them, at which point you run over to them and deal with them. It just feels so good, and it's so unexpected in this game.
Well, and beyond combat, they brought in, I'm blanking on the name of the
Sumo
team.
Sumo Digital.
Yeah, to do these racing games.
All of the vehicle combat, vehicle control has also been totally overhauled. Sumo Digital did the Wii U launch title, Sonic and All-Stars Racing Transformed. Right. They are
starring Danica Patrick.
They're a fantastic studio, and everything, all the vehicle controls show. And there's going to be a game, a toy box game that's released at retail. It's going to be like 5 hours long or something. It's coming out. Never announced a date, but it's called Toy Box Speedway, and it's basically a smaller version of Mario Kart or Sonic and All-Stars Racing Transformed, where you can play as any characters they've released, which there's over 100 characters that work with this game.
That's beefy content. Additionally, I mean, I've seen video of both 2D and 3D platforming.
The Inside Out playset. So I'll get into the playsets now. Playsets, you get one when you buy the starter pack of the game, which, by the way, cheaper than it's ever been. Used to be $80. Now it's $65, so it's only $5 more than a full-price Wii U game. You get, with the starter pack, you get Ahsoka Tano, Anakin Skywalker, and the playset for Twilight of the Republic, which takes place during the Clone Wars era, so, and has Jar Jar Binks inexplicably as a major character, so good. Screw that. They know what they're doing. But...
Glad you're getting work, John.
Thank goodness.
Playsets themselves are $35, and they come with the 6 to 7 hour-long game, plus two figures that work with that game. And so the Inside Out playset, which comes with Joy and Anger from the film, the recent film, is a 2D and 3D platforming collectathon game, and it's really competently level designed, and later in the game, they really do know how to hide secrets behind the what the characters can and cannot do, and so it makes you sort of max out, sort of stress out the gameplay engine a little bit to try and get some of the hidden collectibles. It's really fun.
So we got to move up. Any closing thoughts on Infinity?
As Holy crap! I was not expecting this. So, the figures and the portal are platform agnostic, and unlike Skylanders, which upgrades for bases every year for the sake of it. Disney Infinity 3.0 uses the exact same base as 1.0. So if you bought 1.0, played it for 3 or 4 hours, didn't get into 2.0, but you still got that base lying around, you can just buy the game digitally for $20 on the Wii U eShop and plug the base in and immediately get started with the toy box. And if you want any of the playsets, you can just buy the playsets piecemeal and save yourself some money.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, especially this time around, they are really cost conscious. Also, screw you, Nintendo. They managed to have a product line of highly desirable figures, some of which are retail exclusive, none of which are hard to find.
Served.
We don't want to talk about Amiibo anymore on the show. Thank you. Those are two games that we might not have gotten to talk about otherwise, but I'm glad that, you know, our audience has the opportunity to know. Maybe one of these you should skip versus one of these that maybe you were going to skip that you shouldn't.
Yeah, really. I'm not saying go out and get fully invested in Infinity, but what I
buy every Infinity figure.
But what all the figures are $14. That would be really expensive because there's. Yeah, they are higher quality figures, I feel, than Amiibo, but
who gives a shit?
Yeah,
they're still pricey.
They are pricey.
Excellent. Thank you. Let's move on. Gee.
Yes. I haven't really known what to play lately, and, you know, like, it's been a while since I played anything with Karen, and we just decided at some point to go back to Mario games, because that's all that, I don't know, like...
Timely.
Yeah, well, you know, and also, like, Karen doesn't really like shooters and stuff like that, and, you know, I don't like them particularly either. Like, I'm kind of running out of ideas of new games to play, and we've been playing Mario Kart 8 for the past few months, and that's getting old a little bit. So, yeah, we went back to Mario. So we started going back to Mario 3D World, and it's such a joy to play. It's such a joy to revisit. It's almost like... I don't know, like rewatching like a favorite TV show or something. Just the presentation of it. I just love the cats, of course, the cat costumes, and they meow at the end of the level and stuff like that. It puts a smile on my face, and we just we constantly laugh when we're playing that game. It's just it's so the presentation is so well done, and there's so many little touches that make the game funny.
Absolutely.
You know? They really went as far as they could with the idea and gave cat suits to the Goombas and
this is the one game that's kind of in my Wii U backlog. Like, it's the one that I still
want to go back and get on it.
Yeah. Although I have not really played it solo, so I don't know.
It works just fine.
Oh, okay, but it's so great to play co-op. Like, it's a really strong co-op game, I find. And So after we finished it, we went and played New Super Mario Brothers U, and almost instant frustration, because the thing that works so well about 3D World is that, yes, it's in 3D, so that means that you're very rarely in each other's way. You know, not only you can jump over them to get across, but you can just run around them, you know, and the levels are so large or so vast, wide, that it's very rare that you're actually going to be like, someone's going to go in one direction and you want to go exactly the opposite, and you're going to be, you know, running against each other and not getting anywhere.
Right.
But in Super Mario Brothers U, that happens all the time. You know, like you just like, oh, wait, I want to double back and check if there's not an invisible bug there. Well, you know, and like you decide, well, I'm going to jump over my partner, and then like they jump at the same time, and it's just like, whoops, okay, so no one's getting anywhere. And maybe we fell in the hole, or maybe like there was an enemy that creeped up on us, or whatever, but or maybe nothing happened. It's just, but it remains annoying, right? So it's a little bit less of a, I don't know, it's not as joyful an experience, I would say. There's a lot of frustration that comes with New Super Mario Bros. U. And not only that, but the presentation, yes, like they've got some neat little touches as well, but you can tell that the development cycle must have been much shorter for it. And also it's using that, you know, creaky old New Super Mario Bros. Engine or look. So there's, I don't think that they went as far as they could have to give it, I don't know, more of a cartoon,
its
I don't
own
know, some style. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly Mario 3D World, the canvas that game has put on, gives them more opportunities. But
absolutely,
it feels like maybe they took advantage of the opportunities they were given more explicitly, more thoroughly than... Mm-hmm. The new Super Mario Brothers games did. Of course, we understand that they made two new Super Mario Brothers games the same year, and they wanted to have this one out for launch. So, I mean, that obviously probably factored into it. But
yeah,
it's there is something about New Super Mario Brothers U specifically that feels very paint by numbers.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas I would say 2, which came out the same year, because of its almost questionable decision to just be, quote, all about the gold. Like, the game is almost kind of self-parody, so it almost gets away with it a little bit better.
Right, maybe. I don't know. Like, New Super Mario Bros. 2, I think, is probably better than most people give it credit for, but I do prefer New Super Mario Bros. U.
I think you
Did
was
I say
a,
2 earlier?
You said 2 is better than people give it credit for. I think U is a better game, but I think 2 mm-hmm. is able to generate more charm, because it's constantly sort of knowingly giving you that look of like, yeah, we just gave you 80,000 coins. I know, this is really stupid, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, no, maybe. But New Super Mario... You is...
No, you!
I did play by myself first, you know, when I first got it. So I do think it's a stronger, maybe, single-player game. And so it's just... Yeah, strictly in terms of co-op experience, I think that 3D World is much better and less frustrating. Although Karen says that she enjoys the controls of New Super Mario Bros. U better because they're simpler, and because the little twirl in midair is actually quite useful.
They're very discreet because you're only moving in two dimensions.
Yeah, also. But yeah, like so it's a good game still, and I would recommend it to most people. And the single player in New Super Mario Luigi Brothers is even better. But if you want a co-op game, I think you should steer towards 3D World if you haven't played that already. But yeah, so other than revisiting old Mario games, like it's not the first time that I complained that I've kind of run out of co-op games to play with Karen. And so a listener was listening, and turns out this listener is actually...
Yes, they do.
Yeah, but this particular listener is also an eShop developer. So a couple of listeners, Michael and Lisa from Entropy Games, sent me a code for their game Astral Breakers, which is a falling block puzzle game. And they do have a co-op mode in there, which is pretty, you know, it's not really something I've seen in many puzzle games. So you've got the regular, you know, single player story mode and stuff like that. Then you've got the versus mode for two players. But you've also got this co-op mode where you're basically trying to delay your doom. You're trying to set up combos to delay this supernova that's sending you garbage blocks. So this
isn't your normal two-player puzzle game where it's competitive.
Yeah, like you can have that, but in this case, you're kind of trying to set up combos together, quote-unquote, except that, well, we'll get back to that.
Yeah.
But the game itself, like, it's a falling block puzzle game. It's very much...
Is it Panel de Pon or Tetris? Like, what are we dealing with here?
No, Panel de Pon is not falling block. It's more it's more like Puyo Puyo.
Puyo Puyo. Yes, excuse me.
Yeah. So you've got these one block at a time falling, and you can't really destroy them until four or five of them fall, and then you have the choice to turn the next item that's going to fall into a block that will allow you to destroy the blocks of that color.
Okay.
So the way that you set up combos is that you willfully don't send up the red block on the red, I don't know what to call them. I should have looked it up.
The kill stone.
Bomb block.
Bomb. Yeah, okay. Yeah. Yeah, actually, and Bomb Monkey actually would be one of the, another comparison I would use. But the bomb block, the red bomb block on the red blocks, so that instead you're going to put it like on a blue block and then kill that blue block and hopefully set off a chain reaction. So yeah, it's pretty well made. I had some issues when I was running it off the hard drive. But then I switched it to the internal memory and that went away. And actually, that's also a problem. That was a big problem when I was playing Runbo last week. I had to move the game to the internal drive and then it was much smoother. Otherwise, I was getting like the game would freeze a little bit for a fraction of a second regularly.
Speaking as a Wii U developer, that is a big issue unless you specifically test against the external hard drive and manage it, because the read-write speeds from the hard drive limit, it's usually audio that if it's that can really bottleneck it if it's trying to pull too much.
It's always going to be slower than the flash memory on the console.
Right, but Nintendo usually tests for that, I suppose, and the indie developers perhaps are not properly warned, or I don't know. Like, it seemed to come as a surprise to the Runbo developers, for instance, that the game was having issues.
So if you're making an indie game for Wii U, maybe give that a shot. Just take a look at it. But it was still playable, right? It wasn't like hitching mid-gameplay.
Yeah, no, it was still playable. Okay. It was, just as a warning.
Yeah, fair enough.
But yeah, like it's a competently made game, and just like the Cat Mario in 3D World, like this game knows exactly what buttons to press to make me laugh or smile, because they've got this little star character that is kind of an asshole, because he's just like, wow, I'm you know, like, hey, are you surprised that you made it this far? I am. The text is written, but they've got voice acting in there, but it's just someone going like,
oh, it's rare voice.
You know? And I don't know, the thing that cracked me up was that when you pause the game, you see the star character, but they put put paws and whiskers on it. And so it's the pause screen, you know?
Nice.
Yeah. So they know...
Good work.
They know what gets me going. But I don't know how to say this. Sorry.
So pretty much anything dressed up in a cat suit really...
I'm
just trying
why
to,
am I here
just
for
trying
this
to work
episode?
Out the parameters here.
One episode anyways. That I want to distance my professional self from.
Just finding out what I'm working with here, people. I just like to know. I just want to know my work environment, that's all.
I'm just, I can edit all this out. So.
Oh, I don't know. I mean, they might go in the stinger at least.
But yeah, so it's a well-made game, but I'm not into falling block puzzles as much, and Karen really isn't really into puzzle games, so You know, we appreciate the gesture and getting a new game to play, but it's not really in our wheelhouse. Like the Puyo Puyo style puzzle games, I just can't figure out. Like Panel de Pon, sure. Like they, when we talked a little bit about Tetris Attack last time, like I wasn't kidding. Like the slowdown in that game is a godsend, and it's pretty much the only reason why I'm competent at it. Puyo Puyo style, like you have to think ahead when you're setting up your blocks to create combos. I can't do that. I can only create combos after the fact, if the game will let me. If the game will slow down and be like, yeah, sure, like take your time. So yeah, you know, and also I had a little bit of trouble. You have to unlock the co-op mode, but I didn't know how, and I played through the single player a couple of times, and I was like, well, okay, I'm stumped. And turns out you have to play the versus mode 6 times first. So
gotcha. Which you'd say if this is closer to your style of game, you think co-op would actually be pretty fun?
Yeah, I think so. Like, but I've realized over the years that I think the only space in my head right now for a puzzle game is for Tetris Attack. Like, I'm not sure if I can learn any other thing at this point. It's
Guillaume's a one puzzle man.
Yeah, I guess. Like, there's just well, you can't master every puzzle game, right?
Speak for yourself.
Or is that just me? Yeah, okay, fine. I'm speaking for myself here.
I got really good at Puyo Puyo Tetris.
Oh, that's Ooh. Yeah, that's a whole different monster.
Let's
not go there. That's
all right.
That's rubbing your stomach and patting your head.
Oh, but it's great.
So I would say that, I mean, it sounds like it's a well-made puzzle game. It just isn't necessarily your cup of tea.
It's well done. Like, I mean, like the combo stuff, I have a lot of trouble wrapping my head around it.
Fair enough. But
that's just me.
Fair enough. John.
James.
Did you fall asleep?
I'm engaged, buddy.
Excellent.
That's, if there was a word to describe me right
would
now,
you, would
would
you
be...
say you're would you say you're revved up?
I might say I'm excited.
Really?
And I need a bike.
You need a bike.
So I got versus Excite Bike.
Wow.
Purely out of curiosity.
You had a fight with an Excite Bike?
I did. Oh. I got excited, so hopped on my bike, started pedaling. So I got versus Excite Bike on the Virtual Console, and
which
mainly because I was just curious about it. I wanted to actually see what the original Excite Bike looked like on the Famicom disc.
Yeah, this is
system.
The FDS Excite Bike game, which we did not get.
Yes, so this one it's actually sort of based on the arcade version of versus Excite Bike. Which had a little bit different course structure. It had 7 different courses. It actually has 3 different modes. It has the kind of original Excite Bike, which is not like the console Excite Bike. It's like the arcade Excite Bike, which it has like 7 courses, and you have to qualify, then race, then qualify, then race, and you kind of go through that.
It's like a circuit.
Yeah, and then it has a 2-player version of it, versus Excite, I think it's called. And that's just, you know, you can, you have, it's like a 2-player split screen, and with one person's track on top, one person's track on the bottom, and then you just race against each other, and you can, you know, knock each other off and stuff like that. And then it has the edit mode, which allows you to actually, you know, edit your courses, of course, but you can actually save them this time because you have the Famicom quote unquote disc.
Yes.
To write to.
I mean, it is a disc, John. So, you don't need to put air quotes around it. It is literally a disc.
Well, the funniest thing is on the save screen, they have like a kind of a disc management screen that you go to when you're in the editor, which I'll talk about in a minute. But it's funny because they don't just have like a disc icon. They actually have like a little picture of the goofy looking discs that they used to have. If you look at the pictures, they're these like really kind of weird plasticky.
Yeah, they're blocking
discs. They look like kind of like a floppy disk, except for like something that you would hand like a 5-year-old so they don't get destroyed, you know? It's like some sort
That's
of like
probably
Fisher
what they
Price
were.
Disc. Yeah. Yeah. So it's just interesting to see. And so it's also interesting to play an Excite Bike game with a loading screen. It's like you press start on the edit thing that says now loading, and it's like, boy, that's weird to see on an NES
it
game.
Very strange.
Well, you didn't play Excite Bike WiiWare then.
Well,
there was a lot of loading.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Yeah. I can't remember that game. I did play it at some point,
so
though.
So the difference between this game and the Excitebike that we got in the U.S. is that's single-player game only, the U.S. game, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yes. It doesn't have the two-player
mode. And you can create a track, but I hope you only wanted to play it once, essentially, because there's no persistence.
Nope, you can't save it. So the way the editing works is the editor is pretty good. It's pretty intuitive. You have 20 different track pieces that you can drop on the track, and it shows the track at the bottom of the screen. And if you want to, you start off on the left side, the beginning of the track, and you put pieces down until eventually you reach the end of the track. And so you can scroll back and forth by holding down the B button, and that lets you go all the way to the left or all the way to the right, whatever you want to do. And then, of course, you have a button that allows you to delete pieces of the track. And it has a little, up in the top right, it has like a little sort of overview of the entire track to show you where you are in general, because you're kind of zoomed in on the bottom. It's the same view that as you have when you're racing. And then you have a choice of whether or not you want to save the track. You can test run it, or you can just, you can exit out. Like I said, it has the kind of disk save screen, which was incredibly hard to figure out at first. But it turns out that they give you, there's seven save slots. Three of them you can't write to because they already have pre-made tracks on them. I guess maybe to use as a template for whatever you want to make. And you can copy out of those, and so you have like 1, 2, and 3 are occupied with these pre-made tracks, and then 4, 5, 6, and 7 are the ones that you can actually write to.
That's bizarre, but okay.
Yeah, it's kind of weird. I don't really know why. I mean, I assumed that all 7 slots would be open, but I don't know. I don't think you can delete the 3 that are pre-made because they're grayed out, so you can't even select them. But yeah, it's really weird. Like just the phrasing. It's, you can tell this game was. The way that they've done stuff is very, very English and very kind of Japan.
Well, yeah, I mean, this isn't Japanese, essentially. Like, is there any...
Basically,
there's Japanese use of English text is your English in this game.
Pretty much, yes.
Yeah, scrub this thing, is what I'm asking.
No. Okay. The disk save screen, it chooses you to ask your disk condition, which I still really don't even know what that means in the context that they're using it, but what it actually means is kind of select your save file, but I don't even really know if that's what they're
getting
at. Maybe
they want
you
to ask how your disk is doing today, John.
It's kind of showing you the current state of your disk. So you have the first 3 slots occupied, and this is what's in 4, 5, 6, and the rest of the disk, 4, 5, 6, and 7. So it's your disk state, but they call it disk condition. And it's just completely goofy. But
weird. So, like, one of the reasons why you guys are looking forward to Super Mario Maker is to make trollish levels. So, what was the first, like, did you first create an all mud track or what?
It's interesting.
It takes 40 minutes to complete.
You know, that's the thing. Excitebike, these tracks are really simple, right? They take you maybe, not long to play through at all. But it's an interesting exercise to make a track, because you kind of realize that you sort of have to keep a gameplay flow going. Like, it's not fun. Like, you can make it as hard as hell, because I mean, the first thing you do the first time through, you kind of just throw down. You're like, oh well, I'm just going to throw a whole bunch of ramps and this, that, and the other, and throw a bunch of oil down, and throw a bunch of these things that trip your character up, and you kind of like throw everything at the wall. And then when you play through it, you immediately realize that it sucks, and there's about 4 or 5 major flaws in the track that you have to get to. Yeah, I mean, and it's not even about challenge. It's about making it even remotely fun, because you wind up having a huge ramp that pretty much takes the player right into a brick wall. So they bounce off the wall. Like, if you have like a ramp, like, you have to kind of space them out so that the player can kind of get that nice feeling of going off one ramp and then coming back down nicely on the other side of it. And if you space them out too far, then they can't make it, so they land and then they run into a brick wall, or they hit the top of the ramp and bounce off of it and lose speed. So there's a lot of little nuances, which will definitely carry over to Super Mario Maker, it's a lot of the
same
thing.
Is your practice round?
So, I... Monochrono another small plug. Monochrono is designed to be an incredibly difficult game that keeps you coming back.
I'm gonna have to dock you a plug at the end of the show.
Yeah, that's fine. But I was talking to a friend a few weeks ago, and I was basically saying to her, you know, I wish that making games to be hard, like making hard games, was easier. And I think she didn't have the right mindset, like you're talking about, where it's like, it's trivially easy to make something that's almost impossible to play.
It's easy to be a dick. Mm-hmm. It's hard to be skilled at being difficult.
It's very difficult to make hard but fair with a skill ceiling that lets you basically completely conquer it every time, but that you can test being good at the game. Like, yeah. It's real hard.
I'd imagine it's even harder if you made the game, because you've got an unnatural skill ceiling on the title.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let me tell you.
I've seen that with you know, interviews about a few of these old NES games where they pretty much said exactly that. They're like, yeah, the game was so hard because the testers would become experts
at it.
And
they come back like, this game's too easy, make it hard. Like, all right.
Yeah.
You do that.
They said that in the Rare Replay interview with Battletoads, where it's like, we had one tester and he tested all throughout development and he kept saying, make it harder.
What an asshole.
Don't listen to your QA staff is the lesson out of this one.
John, yep.
Hire more than one person. Test frequently.
That's not a bug.
Yeah. Yep. But yeah, really, I mean, even just making these Excite Bike tracks, you really learn the value of playtesting.
Absolutely.
You know? It's because I was just like, wow, this isn't even fun. Like, I don't even want to play my abysmal creation. It's like, because it's like, hey, here's a huge ramp right into an oil slick. And then you fall off your bike.
Yep.
And it's like, wow,
this
sucks.
So did you make it so it's essentially just an unavoidable chain of oil slicks?
At first, yeah, kind of.
Oh, man.
Kind of. But I was actually trying, like, I thought I was being clever with it.
Right.
Like, oh, well, I'll put these ones high on the track and these ones low on the track, so you'll have to go on. But it doesn't work like that because you're coming off a big ramp. And, of course, you get speed off the ramp, so you can't avoid the oil slicks.
Right.
So you wind up, it's just, yeah.
Well, and you can't see them coming either. So you're just, they're just there.
Yep.
Great.
Yeah, so there's you really learn kind of what not to do pretty quickly.
And you know, that is, of course, my fear with the Mario Maker is that we're going to get on the internet and people will just make these levels that are just not good. And we'll have to sort of suffer mm-hmm. through them until we find the ones that are actually not just created by somebody with no concept of, hey, let's make this playable.
Yeah. I'm hoping we'll get some cool stuff, you know, made by some game devs in their spare time. They're like, hey, you know.
Like myself. No.
I wasn't speaking particularly.
I know. No. Super Mario Maker does address all these challenges, and it's going to be fascinating to see when the community learns that just because a stage is completable doesn't mean it's fairly difficult.
Right. I mean, I would argue that in some cases, the ones they showed during the Nintendo World Championships their fairness was arguable.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But like, that was their objective. They were trying to create this just display of chaos.
They were trying to basically make people in the audience laugh really hard so that that image got stuck in their minds moving
right.
forward.
So like, when I make one for you know, us, for the people on this show to consume as kind of a joke, it might look like that, but if I was making one for the general population, it probably wouldn't. Like, there's sort of this implicit understanding in those cases of, I can be the biggest jerk I want because we're just playing. This is just for fun. But it will be interesting to see how the community strikes that balance of these, like, when you see it what's rated, like, do people rate stages where actually the only way you can beat it is if you take the shoe and just bounce up and down and do some dumb garbage to get through it. Like, do they rate those high or do they rate those low?
I mean, it surfaces a percentage of players who have completed the stage.
It does. And that doesn't tell you, though, is it because the stage is difficult or is it because the stage is obtuse? Yeah. Yeah. It'll be interesting to see how that all works out and what people make. I think that might be my most interested part in what this game ends up being.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, As far as this game goes, I mean, Excitebike.
Yes.
It's, if you like Excitebike and you got $5 burning a hole in your pocket, go nuts. It's definitely the best version of Excitebike. I mean, I really like Excitebike, so I don't have any qualms with the price tag.
It's got nothing on Excitebox.
which has got nothing on existing in most of the world.
So, hey, Japan got it as a Club Nintendo gift.
That's messed up.
Yeah, it probably has more of a marketing budget.
There you go.
But anyways.
So, hey-o. I'm gonna speak real brief, because I'm not playing a game that is in any way, shape, or form timely. So I actually didn't plan on talking about it, but some people asked me to speak about it. I'm just slingshotting through the Metal Gear Solid HD collection, not the Legacy collection, because Konami put out two friggin' collections of these games.
The Legacy collection includes the HD collection.
It does, and then it includes a download code for Metal Gear Solid 1, and includes Metal Gear Solid 4, I believe, and it has some Metal Gear games.
The Metal Gear games are on the HD collection, aren't they?
I don't think
so. They're buried in a menu.
Oh, okay. I haven't found them. So if they're there, then...
Because it's the exact same disc, so yeah. It's just on that disc, yeah. The two MSX games are somewhere on there.
Somewhere on that disc. I need to go find them then. But yeah, yes, I'm aware. I've played them. So the reason I bought this was, you know, everything I was hearing about 5 in the lead up to both, you know, Ground Zeroes and the Phantom Pain was interesting to me in a way that the Metal Gear Solid games hadn't been. I had been interested in the absurdity of them, and I had played Metal Gear Solid 1, but that was as far as I had gone. And in fact, I played the version that people don't think is as good, the Twin Snakes version, because I only had one console growing up because that's all I could afford. So I had an N64, not a PlayStation. So I didn't have the base that made me go out and pursue 2, and then I didn't really have the base to maybe go out and pursue 3 because I hadn't played 2. So I've played through 2, 3, and I'm just now starting Peace Walker, which is the HD collection's consistent. So 2 and 3 are HD up ports of the PlayStation 2, 2 and 3. And then Peace Walker is a weird HD port of the Vita game, Peace Walker?
PSP.
Is it PSP? Okay.
Peace Walker is actually really good. That's a really good game.
Yes, I'm just starting that one, so I don't know a whole lot about it yet. So what I will say, and I'm not going to go into the depths of what Metal Gear Solid is. I think everybody understands what those games are. I'll just kind of give you the idea.
Stupid.
If you're where I'm at, well, yeah, but delightfully in some ways. Ways, it's just, yeah.
In Phantom Pain, you can lay down on the ground, shout, do it, and your horse poops on your face.
Good. Like, that makes me happy.
Man, I'm going to have to pick that up.
That makes me
now.
Happy. Like, that's in there is so fantastic. So,
well, yeah, you can also
that's my
lift,
thing.
Lift, you can also airlift your a bear, apparently.
Yeah.
Completely away from you.
You can take a tank.
Strap a parachute on
you can strap a parachute onto a tank and watch it fly off into the sky.
Great. So what if you've only, let's say you're super hardcore Nintendo fan and you played the Twin Snakes and that's all you've done, I'll give you, but you're interested in what 5/Peace Walker is selling. I actually ran through 2, but I don't think you'd actually need to have played 2, because ultimately 1, 2, and 4 all take place in the present/future. And then 3, Peace Walker, and 5 all take place in the past, and they star different protagonists. So you could play them in that order and be fine.
Would miss some stuff if you didn't
miss some references.
If you didn't play 1 specifically.
Yeah,
is really important.
There's some kind of references in 3 that I've seen to stuff that happens in 2, but since 2 happens in the future, it's all more just like Kojima rubbing your nose in it from stuff he made you do in Metal Gear Solid 2. The one thing that playing these games chronologically has given me, though, is an understanding of the arc of insanity that those games have taken. Because the first...
Yeah, they get progressively weirder.
Like the first game, you know, there's Psychomantis, which reads your memory card and talks to you about the games you've played. And that is the high watermark for weird in that game. I mean, the plot's all about a robot that shoots nukes and clones and just complete bonkers stuff. But
yeah,
but it's
like
it's in the Bourne identity territory at that point. Psychomantis,
yeah, kind of like still sort of badass kind of stuff.
What about Johnny Sasaki?
Yeah. Well, yeah, but like pretty much everything stays, you know, in maybe Bourne identity plus in terms of weirdness, except for Psychomantis, who's just out there.
It's got also
like
a little
that
bit
one weird character, right?
It's got also a little bit of Twins for good measure.
Yeah, well, clones.
Yeah, but specifically the recessive, like the
Yeah, it's weird. It's a weird game, but it's not It's not super weird. Two, they've just said, screw it. Let's get nuts. Let's have a good time.
Hell yeah.
And
yeah, two kind
of
lost.
Two kind of lost a lot of people. But
I haven't played through all.
I enjoyed two. There's some parts in it that it gets difficult, not because it's difficult, but because the game is kind of janky in a little way.
The entire time you play is riding.
Well, that's almost the whole game.
Pretty much, yeah.
so like there are parts of that game that could have used additional layers of polish, but that's where the series starts to get bonkers, because that's the point where it turns into this complete political drama. You know, conspiracies, nonsense, crazy town. That's where the enemies start to turn into vampires and invincible people with electric lightning guns. And things start to get out of hand. And then 3 rolls around, which is set, which 3 is interesting because it feels like a Bond, presentationally, it feels like it could have been a 60s Bond movie. Right up to like the intro song for it is a Bond song. That is the Bondest song I've ever heard that's not in a Bond movie. All the pieces are there. Snake, the snake for that mini series.
Naked.
Yeah. He is more of a Bond than the snake later, because the snake, the modern snake as they call it, is goofy and an idiot. He's much more, you know, he's much more aware of the goings on of, you know, international politics and spying and all that kind of stuff, because he's a trained spy. There's, you know, they have the femme fatale character. They have the evil organization inside the Soviet Union. They've got the political intrigue that goes with it. They've got lost nukes, spying, betrayal, all that kind of stuff. Like, it feels like a Bond movie. It's set in the swamp for the most part. Like, there's a lot of stuff going in a jungle. Like, they could be Bond, except there's a dude who shoots bees out of his mouth at you. And there,
that's the end, right?
That is the Fury. Is that the Fury? Okay. No, the Fury's the guy. Fury's the guy with the flamethrower. The bees is the pain. Okay. The end is a 100-plus-year-old sniper who has been dead and saving, quote, the last of his life energy for this encounter. And then when you actually fight him, you and him tangle in the jungle in this big, like, multi-screen area, and essentially it's just the two of you tracking each other.
And no, he's got that's a sniper. Not how you actually play it.
No, but that's, you could, but in a Kojima way, you could just, is it set the clock forward, I guess?
Yeah, you save, you go into the PlayStation 2 system clock, and you set it forward, and you boot it up, and he's died of old age.
Oh my god,
it's amazing.
But I actually stalked him, which means you have to learn how to track in the game, which hasn't mattered at all up until that point. So you're like looking for footprints, and you're trying to use the camouflage, which in that game has a camouflage system, and you're having to scavenge food because Snake gets hungry in this game, and that's how he heals, is having a full stomach. So you're scavenging food by like killing animals in the jungle and eating them, but you're also setting
you actually do eat the snakes.
Yeah. So you're setting your camouflage so he can't see you while you hunt, and then you're tracking really slowly on the ground so he doesn't see you, and you're like pulling out Bond-style gadgets to try to find clues and see where he's at, and then like occasionally like you'll find a footprint and you'll go, oh, I've got you now, you asshole. And you're just kind of slowly sneaking up on him, and you turn a corner and his sniper rifle is pointed right at you and he just blows you out of the ground. It's just like, oh, damn it. Like, there's... That game got so bonkers towards the end that I'm just like, you know what, just keep doing what you're doing. Like, I spent about a third of the game wearing this alligator hat that when you're in the water, it looks like it's an alligator, so enemies just think a gator is going by. But then I'd pop out and Snake just has this big gator over his head, and he just starts just gunning people.
The 3DS version remake of this game has Yoshis hidden everywhere that you have to go find.
Yes, they're frogs in the previous one, and you have to shoot them, which means a lot of times I'm accidentally alerting guards because I'm shooting these things, and I was like, oh, damn it,
but
no guards.
The fact of the matter is, it doesn't feel out of place.
Yeah, but again, it's giant robots, nukes, conspiracies, so like there's a certain amount of just like putting up with its inanity that comes to get to the insanity. And it's like I enjoyed playing these games, recognizing that they've got challenges and that they're older. So I'm interested in getting into Peace Walker, which is a much more modern game. I'm actually going to skip 4. I've heard that the first portion of 4 is really, really good. And then
the ending is amazing.
Yeah, and I've heard that there's a period in the middle there, that's just not a lot of fun.
No.
And the fact of the matter is, I don't need it to get the 5, which is where I'm trying to get.
Yeah, I mean, the ending of 4 has honestly one of the longest cutscenes that I've ever seen in a
game. It like 40 minutes?
It's like a cutscene, then like a small action scene, then a huge long cutscene, then like a huge long cutscene. It just goes on forever.
Yeah, I think it's
and you
40
can
minutes
you can save in the middle. Yeah.
Yep.
And the thing is, you can't skip them either, if I recall.
Really?
I think you have
they
to watch.
They patched that.
I think so.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Because originally you couldn't. When
Good
I first
Lord.
Beat it, I was like, "Oh my
it was
god,
in the,
Lord. Kill me!"
I believe
please.
It was in the patch that added trophies to it, like 3 years later.
Good, okay. Timely.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm gonna go ahead and I may come back to 4, but because if you're just trying to get to Peace Walker, if you hear what's going on there and you're interested, I think HD Collection can get you most of the way there, because ultimately playing 3 and playing Peace Walker gives you most of the story preface to get to that game.
About all of it.
Yeah, so that's where I'm trying to
as
get.
As long
to.
As you do Ground Zeroes.
Right. So you were telling me that Ground Zeroes has a lot of story that ties into Peace Walker.
Yes, Peace Walker is necessary for Ground Zeroes. Ground Zeroes is necessary for Phantom Pain. Peace Walker isn't necessarily necessary for Phantom Pain in a weird way.
Great.
Because what Ground Zeroes does is it takes the loose ties from Peace Walker, it closes them, and then it opens a new one in a huge way that starts off Phantom Pain. And if you haven't played Ground Zeroes, you're going to spend the first 90 minutes of Phantom Pain being like, what the actual hell is going on? I have no context for anything.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Yeah, I'm playing through Ground Zeroes right now. It's Metal Gear.
Yeah,
wait.
That's about all I can tell you.
Can you save in the middle of that? Or is it... I thought you could only do it in one sitting. Wow.
No, you can save.
One other thing I'll say is, if you really want to get there quick, Metal Gear Solid 3 had a mode in the menu that just gave you the rundown of what happened to Metal Gear Solid and Metal Gear Solid 2.
Ground Zeroes has that for Peace Walker.
Yeah, because nobody played Peace Walker.
Yeah.
So, but if you want to get started in the legacy of Big Boss, who is the main character of those games, you could just jump straight to 3 and watch the little summations of what happened to Metal Gear and Metal Gear Solid 2. Which, if you really want to get the 5, but you really want to have the context, and you feel like, I really need that, that might be your way in. Go ahead, just play 3, Peace Walker, and then you can roll into the new stuff.
Phantom Pain, cool. doesn't require any context, but it's absolutely best with context.
Yeah, that's kind of what I figured. But, speaking of best with context, that's the end of our context for new business. I don't know. That doesn't have a transition. I need transitions.
Smooth.
John,
congrats.
No, you're not always giving me stuff like, speaking of unending hellscapes, we have our website. Sometimes I have to shift hard. We'll be back after the break with some listener mail. Weirdly, also news at the same time. Stay tuned. Now playing, a sampling of the best new original content at NintendoWorldReport.com.
I insist, despite this voice, this really is James Jones. Just so somebody doesn't think John's doing a really shitty impression.
No, I'm not. I couldn't do that kind of impression.
It's a talent. But first up this week, we have a review, Little Battler Experience, LBX, on 3DS by Donald Terrio. It's the polymorphic content that only transmedia properties can give. Savor it while it lasts, we may never see the likes of it again. Actually, it's a total lie, as every game has tie-in coat hangers these days. See if Donald agrees with James' opinion of LBX in his review. We've got a polymorphic content from the same company coming in about a month with Yo-Kai Watch. So, Nintendo just priming the pump. We also have a feature, Remembering Super Mario Bros. Ready for a trip down memory lane? A few members of the NWR crew gather together to share their stories about how they became acquainted with Super Mario Bros. Shockingly, many started playing through their Super Mario All-Stars, which is like snorting cocaine that's been cut several times. Here at RFN, we like our coke raw and uncut. So it's NES Super Mario Bros. All the way. TMI? perhaps, but it's the truth. Also, that explains my voice.
Gotta have that raw. Yeah, last night was, you know, drinking, some ladies, cocaine binge.
If you're
it happens.
If you're listening, I'm sorry.
It happens in the RFN offices, all right? All right, and we also have a feature. The Nintendo World Report Hype Meter. What games are most popular amongst our staff? You're about to find out. We use science to analyze the genome sequencing of each person on our staff to determine their hype threshold for each game looming on the horizon. Actually, we just emailed them and asked them, but science is a much cooler way to explain this list of the top 25.
I mean, email is science.
It is. It's using stuff that was developed in science.
There we go.
Computer science.
Done. Saved. Yes.
All right. And we have an interview with the Pokemon World Champion. Toler Webb is the Pokemon World Champion in question. I think he was the 2012 Pokemon World Champion. This interview asks the burning question we all want answered. When you compete in a championship, does it feel like you're inside the Pokemon anime? Also, does Toler consider himself an athlete? And how does he prepare for competitions? All of this and more in this interview with a Pokemon master, James.
Pokemaster. There was a time in my life where I just didn't train hard enough. Mm-hmm. I had it. But
that's why you didn't catch them all, man. You gotta train hard.
It was the... I might have actually caught them all.
That voice probably scared them off.
It was probably the cocaine, actually. Yeah. I mean, once you start becoming a star, you just have everything. Everything's just handed to you.
You gotta stop riding that white horse, man.
Live too fast.
You know?
All this and more is available to you. I'm not even going to try to make a reference to what we've been talking about because it's going to go badly at NintendoWorldReport.com.
Welcome back. It's time for listener mail. But we got a little bit of a curve this week because this week Nintendo sort of siphoned out some news to disperse onto us. Like a shower of just weird random sources of news from all directions, and not the normal consistent, like all our news is delivered through a monolithic process that you are used to kind of approach that we expect from Nintendo. And that kind of spurred a lot of email. And so we're actually going to cover the news and do a listener mail at the same time.
Hey, James.
Yeah.
I think shower of random sources is a good episode name.
We already have the adult tag. I don't need to earn it harder.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, me with the cat suits and you with the showers of something or other.
All right, we're gonna continue on. And Seren's got the first email. Save us from this conversation.
I do, apparently. Thomas writes, "Hey, RFN crew and Seren. Earlier this week, we learned that Pikmin 4 is in development and, quote, very close to completion, unquote. The news came out of a Eurogamer interview with Miyamoto from July, but was held until now. I am interested to hear your reaction to this story. Why do you think this interview took so long to be released? What additions or changes would you look for in a new Pikmin game? I would really like to see the addition of an online competitive or cooperative mode. First off, Eurogamer is a print magazine with roughly 1 month lead time."
Yep, I figure you work in print, so you can certainly...
100%, you do the interview... on a daily outlet, you do the interview at least a week and a half ahead of print. And if you're the only outlet that gets the news, you aren't pressured to run it day and date.
Right.
So Eurogamer probably got the news and said, okay, we're not going to put this online. We're saving it for print. Ran it in the print magazine. And then, I mean... that's what happened. So, like, a month later, that's why it came out now.
Well, and additionally, he was in Europe doing his press tour.
Oh, yeah.
At that point. So that was when he was there. They weren't going to fly him back out there to talk with Eurogamer. And I'm sure there were all kinds of agreements that they signed with Nintendo that this stuff would come out roughly contiguous with the release of Mario Maker, since ultimately this was to promote Mario Maker. They produced videos alongside this that are all Mario Maker themed and branded.
And those videos are actually incredibly interesting.
They are. It talks a lot about design and how they work through the process of making a level.
Yeah, if you haven't seen it, it's Mr. Miyamoto and Mr. Tezuka sitting at a table
pointing out all the things in 1-1 that, and like basically going over the design of the entire level.
Yep.
Yeah, it's really cool.
So yeah, it's a mix of just the difficulty of the print medium and also agreements with Nintendo for the purpose of getting it, and probably also just scheduling. That's when they were available to sit down and do this stuff, because that's when they were in Europe.
Yeah, and they probably didn't have any particular time they wanted to announce this either, so.
Well, I mean, they did when Mario Maker came out.
Yeah,
like, well,
and NOA PR has confirmed, yeah, that's accurate.
Yep. Which, I mean, so it's the actual news that well, there's two pieces here. There's also that I mean, not that it's super surprising, but that Tokyo EAD is working on something for the next system, as they say.
Hmm.
I mean, the actual news that there's Pikmin 4 coming is kind of shocking. It's almost done.
It is. It is, and it kind of isn't. Like, I'm super excited about it because I'm the one guy from the crew who really loves Pikmin 3. But I guess it makes sense because when you think about it, they released a patch to add stylus controls to Pikmin 3 way after they were done making DLC for the game.
Yep.
And you gotta think, like, guys, why are you still working on Pikmin 3? Like, what are you doing? The game is done, you shipped it, it didn't really do all that well, you finished a DLC. Why would you still labor at this, like, adding new control schemes and stuff like that? And also, like, Nintendo tried to bring the game back a couple of times, like, just, what was it with Mario Kart 8 that you could get Pikmin 3? Or
which I did, and that's, in fact, that's why I have a copy of it that I'm getting ready to play, is that I got it with Mario Kart 8.
So there you go, and there was also, it's also been a giveaway on the Club Nintendo a couple of times.
Yeah,
so.
It's also worth noting that they said, hey, we're going to try and continue the Pikmin brand in a bunch of ways, and then the only way that, until now, we saw fruit of that, no pun intended, was when they released Pikmin short films.
That's true.
Right.
And they said multiple ways, and then they went radio silent, so it made sense that there was going to be something Pikmin related, and now we found out it's Pikmin 4.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's, I guess my surprise is mostly just from the fact that, I mean, I don't think Pikmin 3 did particularly well, so I'm
It did worse than the GameCube ones.
Yes, yeah, so I was just surprised to see them go back to the well so soon, but I mean, ultimately, they have a platform that's conducive to it, and now they have a control scheme that works really well. So, I mean, maybe that's, they feel like this is what they want to keep doing, and they're just going to keep getting after it. And maybe with they've already got the game engine built, they feel like the cost benefit there, they can actually pull this out okay.
They probably have a lot of the assets.
Yeah, so maybe they feel like this makes monetary sense. They can pull a Final Fantasy 13, whatever number they're on, and reuse some assets and get some of that money back.
But now, because of that, do you think it's going to be really similar to Pikmin 3?
I mean, they already introduced a new control scheme, which, to Guillaume's point, may have actually been something they came up with development in Pikmin 4, and they just said, we can put this into 3, and we'll do it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, right. I mean, I would expect that they're playing with new ideas, but at the same time, I mean, they could be taking the Galaxy 2 approach, which is we had these ideas we wanted to put in there, and we just didn't have the time or the space, so we're doing another game that tries some different stuff within the same gameplay model.
I feel like it's going to share similar gameplay models. There's definitely going to be, like, new characters, at least one new type of Pikmin.
Yeah.
But, and, you know, it might not be, you know, collecting fruit, but I feel like, yeah, the gameplay model, the sort of structure, the environment structure, I feel like a lot of it's going to be similar.
Yeah, like I've got no imagination trying to evolve the Pikmin formula, so I've got no idea what they could possibly add, you know, in terms of Pikmin abilities and stuff like that. But like the easiest thing is probably
shoot
like
bees out of their mouth.
Shut up. There's probably I don't know, like color palette changes. Like, I mean, like just new environment. Like we've seen the same. Types of environment in all three Pikmin games, so they might try to switch for something more urban or something, because I mean, like, the world of Pikmin is a post-apocalyptic Earth. They could probably go further with that than just, here's a jungle and here's a water
confirmed
stage.
It takes so place in the same world as Fallout 4.
Guillaume's waiting for that Chibi Robo crossover.
Pikmin has changed.
Guillaume's waiting for that Chibi Robo crossover that his fan fiction's about.
Yes, I am. But in terms of things that we don't necessarily think they're going to do, but that we wish for. I do hope that they can add a co-op mode for the main story. Because they've had, there is a co-op mode in Pikmin 3, but it's only for the mission stages and the DLC. And it's pretty cool, but it's just like collaborating to get fruit as fast as you can and score points. And, I think they could probably go like story mission, having someone else do something, like having a teammate, like you could accomplish, so much more stuff that way, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
So that's what I'm hoping for.
I would like to see, you know, some real deep and interesting Miiverse integration. I think that Miiverse is one of the things they tried with Wii U that showed a lot of promise. In some games, have used it better than others. Mm-hmm. I feel like with a game like Pikmin, where there is a lot of experimentation and trying things and figuring stuff out, you could create stages that would leverage the Miiverse well. You know, how you would integrate Miiverse with that stuff. And I don't mean like... Actually, I'll give you a good example. So in Mario 3D World, yes, the Miiverse outside of the stages is a lot like in Dark Souls, where there's these kind of opaque warnings. Like somebody will be like, jump on the second block, and you're like, what are you talking about? Like that's kind of fun, but I feel like you could take that to another level on Pikmin, where it talks about how to manage that stuff. I mean, obviously, Thomas's online suggestion would be cool, but... I don't know. I don't know if Pikmin Online would have the base necessary to make that a kind of a long-term experience. You know, I go back to the Ace Combat Infinity conversation I had where we sat in a room waiting for it to start for a long time. I don't want that. But certainly I think online would be helpful for someone like me who doesn't really have somebody to play co-op with very often. Saren, John, you got anything?
Crossover with Ogre Battle?
That's your wish. You're just saying what you think James wants to hear.
That's not my wish either. You know, the crossover with Chibi Robo.
I'm ultimately just a proxy for James Jones.
Yes, you are. I'm glad you recognize that. Crossover with Chibi Robo, even if it's just as a cameo, like you just see one sitting up there, it'd be pretty cool, I'll be honest.
Chibi Robo would be massive compared to Olimar.
Yeah. But I mean, everything in the Pikmin world is massive. Even if it was just like he's sitting up on a ledge somewhere. I think the
Explore his husk.
Yeah, I think the urban environment suggestion though, the Geomat is it would be cool. But they may have to be more explicit about it being the end of existence, because rotting buildings and stuff. Which
you know what I want?
What's that?
Amiibo support, because everything.
You will get it, believe me.
There is an Olimar and Pikmin Amiibo. I guarantee it will do something.
We will be lucky if there are not individual Pikmin Amiibo. Oh god, that hurts too much. Guillaume, save us. Next email.
Yes. So Martin writes, "Dear all, with the latest reveal of Pikmin 4 via Eurogamer interview, which granted was done back in July, and the lack of any events since E3, the longest time we've had since when? Did the sad passing of Mr. Iwata also mean the end of the Nintendo Direct? If this is, as the E3 show said, a time of transition, what do you think would be a good way to fix it or change it were it to return? If it were not coming back, how should Nintendo handle information, as it's clear that E3 no longer is a priority for them in the traditional sense? Many thanks for the great show."
I strongly disagree with the premise that E3 is no longer a priority for them in the traditional sense.
I think they showed what they had this year, and that was it.
They showed everything that... they had that was going to be launching within 12 months.
Yep.
Give or take a few games, like possibly Style Savvy that doesn't show well, and just a bunch of stuff that doesn't show well.
Yeah.
I think that Martin refers to the fact that they're not doing the press conference thing, the traditional press conference thing. But the thing is, they're still at E3 and they're still doing stuff at E3. They're just trying different things.
They did the
Nintendo
World Championship.
They're announcing more stuff. They're announcing more stuff at E3 than they... were when they had the conferences, because they announced so many details at Treehouse Live that if you're not sitting there watching it the entire time, you'll miss out on game announcements, you'll miss out on who the developer of Star Fox Zero is.
You sure will.
Like,
we didn't know, so, I mean, to give an anecdote from last year, we didn't know about Devil's Third. The team at E3 didn't know about Devil's Third until day two of E3, when somebody actually got to the website and was just reading the news and like, what the shit is this?
Yeah.
So there's this weird sound bubble around you if you're there that I think they're talking the whole show now versus before where they would talk for the hour and a half before the show starts.
Mm-hmm.
But to the question about Nintendo Directs, which is ultimately what he's asking about, why haven't we had one in a while? And I mean, I think we all pretty much agree that yes, the passing of Mr. Wada has factored into the lack of Nintendo Directs at this point.
I can comment on this.
Yes.
Cannot give sources, though I can say I am 100% certain in this source. They have never led me astray before, and this source
it's
has
me.
And this source at NOA has helped me get information for a couple of years now. Yes, it's absolutely due to the passing of Iwata-san. And yeah, until you start hearing about the new corporate structure, and I don't mean temporary co-CEO-ship.
Right.
That you're probably going to be getting social media blasts like, and I'm going to bring this up again because I'm so excited for this game. A couple days ago, Nintendo of Europe just tweeted, hey, Suf, we're bringing a new Style Savvy over.
Just cause.
Yeah, just cause. Oh, by the way, it's getting a hardware bundle because we want to push it, but we're announcing it with a tweet.
Yep.
Or...
At which point, one person freaked out, and that was you.
I freaked out enough to cover for 10 people, thank you.
Or the press release carpet bomb, where it's like, hey, here's a big spreadsheet.
Yeah.
It's got like 47 things on it. We're not going to give you any context. Just opening paragraph telling you, just read the spreadsheet.
Yeah, just here is an infographic of the release dates of every game we have coming out before December 31st, except for two.
It's just here's game date price, game date price, game date price. Go. That was it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, to your source then.
Yes.
Do we think once they've sorted out their new management structure and that... I mean, ultimately, there's going to be questions like, who's CEO of Nintendo of America? Because that was Mr. Iwata. So is Reggie now CEO of Nintendo of America? What are they going to do there? How does that affect who answers the who?
I'm pretty sure he temporarily is.
I would imagine so. I can't imagine they would have...
He's acting CEO.
Right. Like, are they going to free up those divisions now? Because do they have somebody who is, A, comfortable enough with the business in the other non-Japan regions in Japan to be the CEO of those regions? Like there is a certain amount of business acumen that Mr. Iwata had on a global level that they don't necessarily have somebody
Absolutely.
With anymore. And just linguistic skills. I mean, he was a fluent English speaker, which is a big deal, obviously, when he's talking to Reggie.
Yeah. The thing with that I'm thinking, if Reggie becomes CEO and crazy as it might be, Shibata leans NOE towards a more independent direction, and the new CEO of Nintendo is not somewhat conversationally fluent English speaker or knows how to pronounce all the words that's on the prompter.
Yeah, this is strict.
Then, no.
No.
No, I don't think Directs are coming back because, I mean... NOA could have a direct, like the way they announced Chibi Robo Ziplash, where they have Bill Trinan doing a gag, and then you just zoom up, and there's Bill, and he's explaining the game.
The Bill Trinan mini direct.
Yeah, the Bill Trinan mini direct, you know.
The nightmare.
Treehouse, videos of people from Treehouse, maybe Reggie sitting at his desk discussing some of the upcoming business plans for E3 or whatever, but I believe in Japan? I mean, Mr. Morimoto-san, for the last couple directs in Japan, he led them in place of Mr. Iwata, and Mr. Iwata explained it to the Japanese audience as, hey, I'm not going to be doing directs anymore, I think the reason he gave was he was busy, but we obviously know now it was his failing health.
Yeah.
I have trained Mr. Morimoto to to do the directs now. I'm sure he'll do a fine job. He's our new PR manager.
Do you think he did a fine job?
Yes.
So,
but only in Japanese.
Right, obviously.
And they're not going to do a whole direct in subtitles.
No. The individual things maybe, but not the whole thing. So I could see them each region taking on its own flavor at that point then.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, Nintendo of America produced that absurdist Reggie workout pre-E3 thing.
Like, don't forget the Tomodachi Life Direct.
I'm trying. So, like, that may be the angle they choose to pursue on. And maybe they just start working with NOE, and NOE starts using more of their content. Because NOE historically used a lot of NCL's Nintendo Directs and then dubbed over them. So maybe they just start, those two start coordinating more than NOE and NCL coordinating their stuff. I don't know. I mean, what about the rest of you guys? What are you thinking?
I think that they should bring back Nintendo Week. I think it's time.
I think they should
bring back. John, what are you thinking?
I think they should bring back Camp Hyrule.
That's more realistic.
No, I've seen, I've seen the actor for Gary in some commercial, like for a power bar or something. Like, he's standing in the elevator. He's not doing anything. So just bring him back, and probably the actress is also not really in demand, so... Hey, go for it. I mean, it's a golden opportunity.
Yeah, because Nintendo Week wasn't literally the worst thing ever.
Also, they don't have the literally Nintendo the channel best. Anymore, so unless it's a mandatory pre-roll every week on the eShop.
It's just the Wii U splash screen when you turn it on versus being an ad about them showing Nintendo World Championships on Disney XD. It's just that video plays, and you have to suffer through that.
Please,
again. God, those were nightmares.
I think Don still has all of them up on YouTube.
I'm sure he does.
If you want
to
go back and relive the horror, Guillaume, but none of us.
It is so entertaining. Dark Gary, it's just genius. He's like Gary, but he's Dark Gary. The writing was top notch.
I'm glad you're
hey,
an
John,
expert.
Hey John, can you take the next email?
I'm glad you're an expert on the canon of the Nintendo Week.
And Kobe Skills writes, "Hi guys, I want to get your opinions on reviewing recent Nintendo games. Splatoon, like many Nintendo games, was polished as hell compared to other major releases like Halo Anniversary, Skyrim, and GTA, but got dinged on multiple reviews for content." Lack thereof.
The content on disc that you could access.
Yes, Nintendo was aware of this and didn't seem to care, as it withheld content to release throughout the weeks and months following its release.
Yeah.
Mario Maker does something similar with their time limit to unlock all of the content. Should reviews take this into account when reviewing games like Splatoon or Mario Maker, or just have tunnel vision and review the reviewer's copy and ignore the potentially different consumer version? Should a review in progress happen and then post the actual score a week or two later once the game is released and full content added, or unlock later as Nintendo seems to be doing now?
Well, I would say in the case of Splatoon, they're still unlocking content.
Well,
although I think they're patching into the game now.
Yes, all the content on disc is available to players,
but
as far as we know.
That was months after the game came out. So,
yes, but they sped up their release plans post reviews.
Sure,
intended to be a slower drip of more content at a time.
Okay, but I mean. It, obviously, it was not viable for a reviewer to wait for all of that content to come out.
Of course not.
No,
yeah,
but,
and I mean, reviewers are going to review the game that's in their hands, right? They're not going to review the game
that
they think may come out.
That's what they should do. Because
exactly.
What was fascinating to me with Splatoon and Mario Maker, Dream, except for Splatoon specifically, and this is really inside baseball, the review code that Nintendo sent out for Splatoon did not give you access to the retail game as most codes do.
Right.
Most of the time, like, imagine you redeem a game on Club Nintendo and it gives you the 16-digit code. You go into the eShop, it says, thanks, you know, items purchased with a token can be downloaded for free, and you download it, and then you start playing it early. With Splatoon, it was Splatoon open brackets media, and that meant that it was on a different server, a totally different timeline. That version of the game is completely useless now because Nintendo shut down the servers and hasn't updated it.
Yep.
But, you know, encouraging media to move over to the full version, which they were more hesitant to provide. That said, I
found it fascinating that they didn't opt to, in the media version exclusively, let reviewers know of their plans and then say, release a stage every 2 days during the review period.
Right.
To give an example of what it was going to be. If I believe that if Nintendo really cared about that for reviews, that's what they would have done. And the fact that they didn't shows me that they expect people, reviewers, to review
right.
what's there.
I think from the standpoint of giving the customer the best information, that's also a nice transparency thing. The reviewer is having an experience that was indistinguishable as best as possible from what someone had when the game came out.
Yes.
So if they were reading the... It does mean that the review may not reflect the state of the game now, but that's true about reviews in general. You know, when a game comes out that's just a complete, you know, sideshow of bugs, then even if it gets patched, it's the outlet may go back and update the review. They may not. It depends on, you know, resource availability and if they feel like it's necessary. I mean, ultimately, you review what's in front of you.
I mean, should Pikmin 3... reviewers have held off until like a year and a half later when they patched in the new control scheme?
The patch I didn't know was coming.
Yeah, of course not. I mean, you review what, first of all, you review what the company gives you.
Right.
Yep. And
Nintendo, not the PR they give you, the game they give you.
Yeah, no. Nintendo, again, they could have chosen to do this with Splatoon, which would have made this an incredible gray area of, well, should you review the new content or not? But what they just chose to do was, here's the content that players will be able to... They did turn on ranked for a little bit, but here's the content that players are going to be able to play when they put the disc in or preload and launch at midnight. What do you think?
Yep.
And then reviews answered the question, should you buy what they're offering you right now?
Right. So I put this one in there, because I said this is the news email section, because today it came out that Nintendo has a day one patch for Mario Maker.
Yep.
Now, previously Mario Maker had a requirement that you play the game for 15 minutes every day for 7 days, and then after 15 minutes it tells you, hey, tomorrow more stuff is coming, and it would unlock more components.
Wasn't it 5 minutes?
5 minutes, maybe. Yes, it was 5 minutes.
Five minutes a day for 9 days.
So their objective there was to not just throw you in the deep end of the pool right away. And reviews in general were fairly negative on this. Although some reviews admittedly said, you know, I thought I was going to hate this, but having it sort of hold my hand a little bit helped me not feel overwhelmed. Mm-hmm. But so the reviews are written with the assumption that that is part of the game because Nintendo intended that to be part of the game.
Yeah.
But Nintendo today released a patch that says, actually, you're not going to make you wait over days, but... have they announced what the difference is now?
Two hours, 15 minutes if you want to unlock all the content. And they also explicitly said, yeah, you can change the Wii U, the Wii U clock, just to basically 2 hours, 15 minutes if you really don't want to wait, but they still recommend you do.
Yeah. So in this case, the reviewers have an interesting situation where they have a game that's not even out yet that is now materially different than the game they reviewed.
Again, it was another media version on a different server as well, so...
Yeah. So maybe they would update their review at this point. I mean, so to give you an example, our review is still prominently featured on the main page of the site. I imagine that Neil, the reviewer, is going to go do an update. But I wouldn't have expected Neil to hold it beyond the embargo window on the review.
No, never.
Yeah, I mean, people want to know, right? They want to know as soon as
Nintendo wanted us to put the review up that day. That's why they did the embargo. They wanted to flood the internet with reviews of Mario Maker because they knew they had a product that was going to review well. Mm-hmm. Now, this one thing that people didn't like about it is now not an issue. However, the game still reviewed well. I mean, we still gave it a great score. Maybe we'd give it a half point higher. But it's not a big deal.
And with Splatoon, I mean, the game reviewed pretty well overall.
Oh, yeah.
I guess it could have reviewed much better if it had been more clear that there would be much more content after a month or two. But
I don't know. About
it's
that,
almost but... as if, well, I don't know. I think that was a major sticking point in most reviews. So I imagine that the score would be bumped a little bit. And Nintendo does care about scores because they brag about their Metacritic
insufferable
all the time. Yeah, so that's pretty annoying. But in this case, I almost think that they saw the reviews as secondary in importance to the fact that this game would be talked about pretty regularly, or at least they hoped it would be. And it kind of has turned out that way, because with their Splatfests and stuff, it, at the very least, you get some traction on social media, you know?
Yep.
Like, you get a Team Decepticon in there, and yeah, sure. Okay, people are going to talk about
Splatoon. Or they announce something like the bucket, and you're like, they're putting a bucket in the game. Why are you But you go back because you're like, okay, I want to see how a bucket works.
Right. And on Nintendo World Report, I mean, we have news stories when the Splatfest is over, you know, and who won and how it panned out.
And we get a lot of press releases about Splatoon because they're constantly putting stuff in the game. In fact, they launched a new ad campaign recently that's not nearly as child-based. You know, it's much it's targeting a much and it's an older audience, it's targeting a more broad audience. And one of the things they talk about in their review, they call it out explicitly, is that the game is changing all the time. That there's new content added all the time.
Right.
Like, they're basically, it's both an impetus, people who saw the initial reviews and said, I'm not that interested, it's not that much content, and people who have the game and aren't playing it right now. Because that game lives and dies by having an active base, and if Nintendo can re-engage the people who bought the game, that's good for them, and possibly for future plans they may have for that game in the future to monetize extra money out of you.
Right. So, yeah, just in general, it seems like Nintendo was okay with trading kind of initial good reviews for...
Well, for great reviews, I guess, is the way... Great reviews for good reviews for some other cause.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, they're sort of been treating it like a games as a service, except done right, and not trying to... like require a subscription, basically.
Right.
Like, this is games as service sort of done right. And
or new packs, Destiny style.
Yeah. No.
Well, I'm saying that's the other way you could do that. That they chose not to embrace.
Yes. No. And the reviews sort of were supposed to be answered to the question: is the content you get day one worth $60? Like, should you spend $60 on the content on day one? And the answer was, yeah, probably. Not yeah, definitely, but yeah, probably. But then they just kept adding and adding and adding and adding and adding and adding. And you would absolutely hear if they added content that, lowered the value of the game, but they haven't.
Yeah, and I mean, I think things will be different with Splatoon 2. If they do the same thing, because people will have a precedent. There was no precedent for the way they were gonna. I mean, they were just like, absolutely. They were just like, "Hey, trust us. We're gonna release stuff," and people were like, "Yeah,
we've heard this before."
Hopefully,
from other people.
Yeah,
yeah. It's like the first thing that you announced was the only thing you gave a window for was August, and Nintendo has Nintendo's a fan of pushing up against deadlines. For adding features for things.
Mm-hmm.
They are a big fan.
So I will say that one other example we have of them doing, of being reactive, like they were, they apparently were in the case of Mario Maker. And Mario Maker thing definitely doesn't feel like something they were doing for reviewers, because their PR stuff and their videos they put out mention the 7 day or the 9 days. So this is definitely a reaction on their part, is, the game I can't even remember.
Codename Steam.
Yes, where they added the fast forward mode.
Yep.
In that case, the biggest knock on that game by reviewers was, oh my God, the wait times. And they fixed it. So, you know, some of this is reactiveness, and obviously Nintendo might not have, they may have been thinking about it, they may have thought we may do this, they may have even been planning to do this, but, you know, ultimately, they didn't feel like the game needed to wait for that, so they didn't. In Mario Maker, obviously, it had to be a reaction. I mean, I doubt they were like, okay, we need to de-dev this 7 day limit, but we can't do it before the game needs to come out, so.
There's no way that the patch started development at the review embargo. So they what probably happened was they started development when word of mouth was negative, and then when the review embargo hit, they really pushed it.
Yeah. Speed it up.
Yeah.
But ultimately, you know, if you're running an outlet, maybe you go back and do an update to your review, especially if that was a major criticism of it. Like, I can see there being an argument to do it, but you're under no obligation to have waited for that to happen, because you didn't know it was coming. You know, you're not under any obligation to update it. I mean, reviews are not living documents in and of themselves, but games very much are.
If in the process of reviewing the game, they would have said, hey, there's going to be a day one patch to change that, they would have said, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you can't really ask a reviewer to go and play the game again and to update his impressions of the game because reviewers don't have that kind of time.
I mean, they're not going to like track your game. You know what I mean?
So in our case, what I imagine Neil may have already done it. What I'd imagine he's going to have is he's going to put a big bold state at the top that says, "At the time of review, this was the way it was happening. It's like this now."
Uh-huh.
Is what it is.
Yeah. But it's not like someone can.
Erase all your progress and start over.
Right, yeah. Like, you can't have a second first impression. Like, the game felt like that when you played it, you rated it, and that's done. And even if they fix what annoyed you, like, if you go back, that immediately after reviewing it, that's not necessarily a better experience. It might just be even more annoying. Like, well, I played this already. And sure, it's slightly better, but I.
And guess what? Outlets have a limited amount of resources.
Absolutely.
At mm-hmm. our outlet, we publish one review every day,
mm-hmm.
which, given our staff and the length of games and the amount of games that are coming out, that's incredibly difficult because we also don't review games that we haven't beaten.
It's one of those numbers where you hear it, you're like, oh, that doesn't sound so bad. And then you really think about what that involves. And you're
like,
oh, okay.
Yeah. Like, hey, you're going to review The Phantom Pain. Oh, the embargo's in 3 days.
Have fun.
You played for 30 hours and you're 13% done.
Oh, yeah. I'm having Galaxy 2 flashbacks.
And Seren, you play Atlas. You review Atlas games.
Atlas is very good about getting us review copies early.
Atlas didn't used to be.
No, they didn't.
Let me tell you the horror story.
Oh, I'm aware
of the original Persona 4.
Oh no, I'm aware. I've lived that nightmare. But
let's talk about 5 days.
Oh God! I don't want to go there.
I mean, on the topic of patches, I mean, don't forget too that there may be a subset of people that don't apply these patches.
Right. Absolutely.
They don't have internet access or something like that. They play offline, maybe
super rate limited. So they don't want
to
do it.
Yeah. So it's not like the review without the patch suddenly becomes, you know.
And Johnny's
obsolete.
Johnny's not here to have that argument with us anymore. But I've always said that, like, if a game comes out broken as hell, like, that's the game. Like, that's what you should review. You shouldn't say, well, there's going to be a patch that'll fix this. Like, so Master Chief Collection, which he calls out in the email, like, mm-hmm. that was one of those situations where if you did a day one review, maybe you didn't realize how bad that situation was going to be.
Yeah, that's an interesting case.
And
because it would have bore the problem would have borne itself out over the following week.
Right, and Splatoon, actually, there was precedent there for saying, let's going to hold this review and see what happens when the servers go live. And that's what we did as an outlet.
More outlets do that now. They're like, we're not going to review this.
Well, because they got
it's
burned.
Already launched.
I mean, ultimately what it comes down to is they got burned.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would recommend people to, you know, like if you want to know how a game evolved over time, like go visit forums or ask people who are still playing it, still actively playing it.
Yeah.
Right. And like I said, it depends, and waiting is not necessarily easy, but, you know, to write your review, in some cases you have to just to know what's going to happen. And Nintendo's, like Guillaume said, Nintendo's case for Splatoon was they said, the review hit we may take is worth less than the constant PR buzz we're going to generate. And I think that bore them out. But next email is Nick writes, "Hello, RFN. With the happy sad news hitting that Capcom is making and localizing Ace Attorney 6, and apparently not localizing the great Ace Attorney, it seems like a good time to ask, what would you like to see from the next Ace Attorney game? I recently replayed the original trilogy, and I'm working my way through the Leighton crossover title. I know I want more, but I'm not really sure where the series should go on from here. One thing I am sure about, I'd really like to play the great Ace Attorney. Thanks." I would like to play the great Ace Attorney. That's where the series should go from here.
Yeah, I think so too.
I, as someone who has beaten it and bought the season pass and beaten all 8 extra cases and watched all the documentary content, it's my second favorite Ace Attorney game.
And it didn't sell well in Japan. It didn't sell well at all in Japan.
It sold really bad, really poorly in Japan.
Apparently they're making like an anime based on it and doing all kinds of weird stuff.
Capcoming.
Yeah.
Was this email sent before we had gameplay details on 6?
I haven't seen the gameplay details on 6, so...
You are in a... Not necessarily a town, but basically you're in a city/country...
World of Hurt?
where witchcraft is a thing, unlike the definition in Leighton versus Ace Attorney, more like spear medium type. And so the big new mechanic is that in court, there's water mirrors on the floor, and you can look into it to see messages that the dead are sending you to help guide to guide the testimony and guide the case.
God, they're on some powerful drugs over at Capcom.
Yeah, they are. And they also said the game is about 40% done.
Okay, so it's got a ways to go.
So they've gone through like about 40% of their tainted weed stash.
But yeah, it's basically it.
It's going to be playable at TGS, so full gameplay demo impressions will be in like a week.
I mean, not getting into story, what characters I'd like to see make a reemergence, you know, I was struck by playing Leighton versus Wright, how much better as an assistant Maya is than literally every other assistant that series has had, just because it's like you feel like they could write her better than the other ones. But just from the standpoint of, I want that game series to keep being fucking weird. Like, I just want it to be strange all the time. And I like the ending of the, and he played the three first games. Like, the ending of that third game, speaking specifically to Nick, that game got weird and gloriously weird and retconning through just straight up Deus Ex Machina.
And
literally.
It somehow manages to be touching while also making you go, how the hell?
What do you want, essentially?
Yeah.
I want to see the game series keep doing that. And that's one thing that, you know, Leighton versus Wright had, because it had Shu Takumi as the writers. Ultimately, what I want is Shu Takumi written Ace Attorney games.
Dai Gyakuten Saibon has that exact same thing.
I know. That's what I want. I want things written by that man, because that man is a genius.
Yeah, but he decided to use kanji that hasn't been used in 200 years.
Well, yeah, good. Why wouldn't you do that?
But
it's period correct kanji.
It is. God. It's accurate. No, that game, I don't want to say too much about it because, one, I don't want to seem like I'm rubbing it in, and two, I don't want to spoil anything in case
in
it actually
does
come
over. Capcom loses their mind.
In the off chance that it comes over, what I really like about the game is how grounded of a character Ryunosuke is, Ryunosuke being the protagonist.
Yeah.
And your companion is excited because, spoilers past the first case, but literally the back of the box says this, you're traveling out of Japan to go explore the legal system of the United Kingdom.
It's in the trailer, so you're fine.
Yes. And your assistant grew up reading foreign mystery novels and foreign adventure and romance, and she's very excited, but your character is sort of just like taking it all in and studious, but at the same time really sort of heartfelt and funny. And it's basically what they were trying to do with Apollo but failed at.
Yeah. Apollo's not a good character.
Went in some areas they didn't go nearly far enough, and in some areas they dialed it to 11 when they really shouldn't have.
Yeah, there was a little bit of Owl the Edge going on with Apollo sometimes.
And basically, this feels like what that tried to do, but a smashing success.
Yeah, I really like 5, and I've spoken about, I feel like 5 took away some of the adventure game and made it closer to visual novel stuff sometimes, but
that's fine for by me.
I think like the most startling achievement of 5 is the redemption of the character of Apollo. Like it's like that's and they did it by making him demonstrably a worse character. Like, they went and made him a straight up edgelord. Like, there are points where he's basically protagonist in like an anime targeting 8-year-old boys. And he's like, I'm going to go get that. Like, he's just like fuming with pent up rage inside. But like, at that point, at least he has a freaking personality versus before, where he was just everything.
Cords of steel.
Yeah, exactly. Like, what the thing about the Ace Attorney franchise is that everything just kind of happens to the protagonist. Like, they're the only person who's looking around and goes, why are we interviewing a whale? What's happening? What's going on right now? Everybody else is just like, yeah, sure, why not? Let's do that.
Yeah, judge doesn't care.
Yeah, like, the whole premise of just, like, you and the prosecutor are the only ones looking around and going, this doesn't make any sense. Why are
we
doing this?
And especially in the second game, Franziska specifically, does not even look around. She's like, why are you panicking?
Yeah.
I'm going to whip you back into shape.
Yeah, like, it's, so, that's all the writing, so I just want to keep seeing that happening. I think Thor fell down on that. And I think that's what I want to see, and that's kind of why I want to see Takumi in there.
Because... So yeah, 6 is not written by Takumi. What I would like, because there is an A team and a B team, and that's not necessarily, like, quality, but it's A team was first, and then B team formed.
Right.
A team being Takumi's team, B team being the team that made 5 and is currently making 6.
And the Investigations games.
First Investigations game was A team, second was B.
Oh, okay. Which is a really good game, if you haven't played it. It's really good.
Both of them. Second one only legally available in Japanese.
Yes.
So, what I would like to see A-Team move on to, personally, I want to see a game that takes place between the first case of Ace Attorney 3 and the first case of Ace Attorney 1, and stars Mia Fey.
Between 1 and 3. Oh, okay, right, because there's also back in time. Yeah.
First case of the third game, first case of the first game.
Gotcha.
I want a game where you play as Mia Fey, basically. Because she's an established prosecutor, and she's your mentor, but outside of seeing her first two cases, you never get to see that.
Right.
And I would love to see that.
Gil, I know you're a fan of the series. I found that out just recently, actually. Is there anything you want to see out of it?
Just keep Leiden away from it. I still have that game on the back burner, and it's entirely because the Leiden segments are putting me to sleep.
You're not a fan of that stuff, are you?
No, but the trial stuff that I've played through is really good, so I'm
waiting
really
until you see the ending. Wait until you see how they justify it.
Oh my god! But
yeah,
I really enjoyed the presentation leap between with 5. So I'd like to see more of that. Like, just come up with crazy character designs, and the writing is a big part of it. I mean, these are adventure games or visual novel games or whatever you want to call them.
Right.
So I think that's where they stand or fall. I mean, like that's. The writing is everything.
Yes.
So keep it punchy. Keep the situations crazy. The characters crazy.
So you want Takumi to write it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Probably.
And your localization staff.
Although five was good. I mean.
Yeah, 5 was good. The localization staff needs to continue to not care.
Yeah.
That's the biggest thing. The localization staff does not care.
The thing with 5 was that the writers changed, but the localization team didn't.
Right.
So the English writing felt the same, but the Japanese writing felt very different.
Hmm.
And I played it in both because I didn't think that 5 was coming over. I'm glad that they announced right away that 6 is.
I think nice. They would have just been hit by so many, like, their Twitter would have just been just annihilated. It would have been...
They already are with
Digact
and Cybot, and they were with Ace Attorney Investigations too.
Yeah, but imagine if there were now 3 games. Like, it would have just been... It would have been just. It would have been unmanageable.
Then that becomes the series that doesn't come over unless Nintendo makes them.
It becomes Dragon Quest, essentially.
Basically, though, I have the one true answer that I think everyone can agree with. What I want to see next from the Ace Attorney series is stable frame rates.
Yeah. Whew.
Digact and Cybon managed. Other two 3DS games, not so much.
Yeah, the Leiden versus Wright, especially, just completely falls all over itself when certain characters show up.
Stable frame rates.
All right, John, you have the last email.
All right, Jim Boxhunter writes, "Hey, everybody.
That's a
Pokemon
weird name.
Company, Nintendo, and Game Freak announced last night Pokemon Go, a game that they're working with Niantic Inc. on an AR Pokemon game for mobile. Strangely, this isn't part of Nintendo's DNA plans. First question, do any of you have experience with Ingress, the Niantic Inc. game?
Yeah, so, John D., let's just roll through.
I do not personally, but I have a friend who is actually into it. It seems pretty cool, and it seems something that they could slap Pokemon on pretty easily.
Can you describe it real quick?
Is it's all kind of a GPS based, and what you do is it has kind of elements of geocaching with it. What you're trying to do is in the real world, you bring your phone around and they give you a map of the US, and there are nodes that you have to capture or hack in the real world. So they have like, so they map these nodes to GPS coordinates. You go to those GPS coordinates in the real world and you hack the node with the overall goal being to control parts of the map for your team. You
and the node's not a real thing. It's just a spot, right?
Yeah, it's just in the game. So you go to this to a spot in the real world. And you hack the node and then you control that node. And as you string nodes in a line, you start to kind of piece together big rectangles of space on the map, and so on. So it's kind of lends itself to having, coordinated teams of people in different states, different parts of the country that, you know, capture these nodes all at the same time, and they capture big chunks of the map for their team.
Okay.
So very, very cool. And it leads to like a lot of stuff like meetups and stuff where fans of the game will meet up and kind of go hunting and then, you know, go to a bar, stuff like that. So there's kind of that element to it. So, as it continues, second, does the idea of an AR Pokemon game excite you? Third, what do you think this means for Nintendo's mobile strategy, even if they're a supporting player in this one? Lastly, when is John buying Pokemon Go? Also, Hey, me.
Because I wrote this email. Because we had all this news, and then I wanted to talk about this, so I wrote an email. I'm a listener. I could do that. It's my show.
It's against all my principles.
It's not the first time I've written emails to this show while I was on it. I just didn't have the artifice of coming up with a fake name that's in love with John.
Welcome to the James Jones administration.
I'm just going to say right now, I'm not into Pokemon, and I have an iPhone 4 that can't run Pac-Man 256.
Fair enough.
So, I am terrified for one reason. That reason is monetization.
Yeah.
Because Ingress is not monetized because what Ingress does, like, yes, that's how Ingress plays. But the reason Ingress exists is because that's how Google Maps has been getting all its data lately.
Right.
Is they've just crowdsourced, like, hey, here's a GPS coordinate where we're putting a node. By the way, that's a coordinate we don't have very much Google Maps data. Can you help us with that? And that's extremely beneficial to Google. And so Ingress is completely free to play. No ads, no microtransactions. Mm-hmm. You're not getting that with Pokemon.
No.
Well, and nope. It has come out that the thing is going to have microtransactions, but they haven't like given a ton of detail on it.
You failed to catch with a Pokeball. Would you like to spend 3,500 coins for a Great Ball?
What I have seen, you know, the best suggestions I've seen is that it's going to be items. So there is battling in the game. You can battle your friends. There's not an overworld kind of story mode like you'd see in a full Pokemon game, but it's you find Pokemon in the world. They're the nodes from Ingress, and then you fight them and try to capture them. They had a very overproduced trailer they showed last night that had a bunch of people fighting the same Pokemon. I don't know if you can do that or not. They haven't really spoken about that yet. But the idea being that it's just like trying to capture Pokemon in the wild in a real Pokemon game. So I would imagine that, yeah, the items, you know, potions, anti-poisons, and then Great Balls, Ultra Balls, etc., are what you'd spend real money on. And that might stink, but... You know, there's also a way you could spend real money is the Pokemon Go Plus, which is what Nintendo is bringing to the table.
Yes. Game Freak is partnering with development. Pokemon Company is publishing and licensing. Niantic Inc. is doing the heavy lifting on the game development. And Nintendo is going to help with promotion and develop Pokemon Go Plus.
Pokemon Go Plus is this watch or clip thing that you wear that looks like a Pokeball. That buzzes and blinks when you are in a zone that has activity in it. And it talks directly to your phone via Bluetooth. The idea being you don't have to keep looking down at your phone to see if something is going on where you're at. You're just moving through your day-to-day life and all of a sudden your little Pokeball-shaped watch goes off. So then you pull out your phone and you do battle, essentially.
It's Apple Watch, but only works with one app and doesn't have a screen.
Yeah. It's got a light. It's you know, depending on how that's priced, that could be really big for them.
Like $149.99.
Well, I hope not. but if that's pretty cheap in Japan, like that thing could be big. Like, that's sort of the thing. Like, is anybody here actually interested in this as something they want to play?
I'm curious about it.
I'm gonna try it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes, I'm very curious about coverage.
It. Yeah, like I'm interested in trying it for the show and maybe goofing off of it a little bit.
Yeah.
I'm not gonna go buy a Pokemon Go Plus. John will. Because John, You need one, John.
I'll never admit that.
You need one on, like, just hanging from a chain on your neck, like your dog tags.
It would be plated in gold.
There you go.
Go on.
Yeah, okay, that's fine. No, that's all I had. So I'm curious what this. So this is completely independent of the DNA stuff, which is interesting. It means that Nintendo was really working on mobile before they had gone through and linked up all the DNA, because there's obviously a big advantage here if this had been part of it, because then they could use it to push notify about new DNA-based Nintendo games. If you had to have accounts, they could register you on an account now, and then now you've got an account for all their games forever.
Yeah.
That's never going away, but this isn't that.
No. They said this has been in development for 2 years, and
which actually pushes it back to the timeline of that weird Pokemon on Maps thing that Google Maps did for April Fool's Day.
Yeah, and additionally, this was before Nintendo was ever in talks with DNA, because that happened about a year and a half ago.
Yep.
So they signed on with this, and then 6 months later turned to DNA.
Yep. So it's cool that they've got... they are developing strategies for making these games. And ultimately, they came up with a game that does well for what mobile does. But it's not competing with their core business. And in fact, they talk about the idea that this thing is gonna interface with the next generation of Pokemon titles, which I would assume means trading or passing Pokemon you caught in the game into one or the other, which is cool. It's their way of trying to use mobile to increase the value proposition of the games that Nintendo is selling to you directly, their retail products.
And it also sort of indicates that NX will probably have some sort of portable component to it.
Because probably.
The Pokemon games have always been, there are console games, but typically...
Well, they said their next generation of Pokemon. They meant their next Pokemon series.
Yeah, which are typically portable series.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
But
they didn't mean their next generation of consoles. They meant the games after X and Y.
Here's the thing.
It can be interpreted several ways.
They put up a timeline, which I actually stared at for a bit and started running the numbers, because I hadn't actually, call me stupid, but I hadn't actually seen a timeline laid out like that for the generations. And mm-hmm. It's always been at least three... never more than 4 years between a Pokemon generation.
Yep.
And so I started doing the math. Okay, 2013. Well, it's going to be 2016 or 2017 if they follow, and it feels like they are.
And 2016 is the 20th anniversary of the series.
Yeah, it's the 20th anniversary of the series, and that would be a perfect timing for a 3DS Swan Song game.
Yep, that may actually run correctly.
I feel like that all lines up together.
Yep. So... you know, it's interesting. I wonder if this does tip their hand about what they think mobile is for them. Like, how they can position games to not compete with their core business, but supplement it in a new way. And, you know, this thing could make them a lot of money depending on if it's an enjoyable experience. So.
And it's not Pokemon Shuffle.
Yep. All right. That's going to do it for the show. We got some plugs to get through. First up, it's the Mario Maker Retroactive. And in fact, we did some talking amongst ourselves, and we got a lot of great suggestions from you listeners about what kind of Mario game you'd want us to play in a retroactive. And we actually...
That's a great suggestion. So we ignored all of them.
No, we didn't, actually. Everything on there is a suggestion, with one exception. And what we ended up doing is we said, well, we think that there are some Mario platformers that we absolutely want to do retroactives of, and we may do them by fiat, or we're just going to say, we're going to do this game.
Super Mario Brothers 3 on 3DS?
Yeah, explicitly the 3DS version. So we're going to do those at a later date. There was a lot of suggestions. We may do a Mario RPG retroactive. We're just going to put different RPGs in the Mario series on there. It's the time of year we've actually got a lot of games coming out, so RPGs maybe not the best thing to do for a retroactive
now.
Yep, so the four games are Mario Tennis Power Tour on the Game Boy Advance, which I've heard some good things about. I've heard some very, very good things, like it's brimming with glee. Evident in its visual style. Mario Pinball Land for the Game Boy Advance, currently available on the Virtual Console, which I've heard some different things about. Super Smash Bros. For the N64, which is available on the Virtual Console. Guillaume hasn't actually played it. And Mario Party Advance, because I've always wondered what single-player Mario Party was like.
As have I. What a coincidence.
So, those are your choices. Poll should be up right now, but we'll give a week or so to vote, and then we'll go ahead and announce it, and we'll probably do the retroactive a week after we announce it. So we'll announce it, we'll do a week, and then we'll actually do the game. So go ahead and make your selections, and like I said, we're going to do a retroactive that features some of these larger games that people really want us to play. And so we can do some plugs. Of course, Saran's managed to squeeze a couple in now as developer and lead everything for her company, Four Quarter Games.
Yeah.
Guillaume was on a Radio Trivia Podcast Edition, episode 137, that came out last week.
It was.
That's a podcast produced by our friend, Michael TYP Cole, where you get to listen to video game music, and then you get to guess what game it is from. You get a hint at the game after song two, right, with a trivia question?
Yep, and I surprisingly didn't embarrass myself too much this time, and that's of great music. The banter, my banter, feel free to skip over it, but the music is great. So
I haven't done one in a while, so you know I've got a list of games that could be real monsters for that. But in this one, actually, I'm gonna go ahead and, since it's been out a week, go ahead and name one of them. One of the games that's on there is Final Fantasy Legend 3, which, after seeing that was on the list, I went and listened to some of the music. That's really good music for the Game Boy. Like, really solid.
Yep.
Unless that's not a Game Boy game. That's a Game Boy game, right?
It is.
Excellent. Excellent. So on that, that's going to do it for the Triple Fours of Ready Free Nintendo. I want to thank Saran for being here.
You know you want Mario Party.
I want out. And I want to thank John and Guillaume for joining me today and dealing with this extra long episode. And of course, thanks Guillaume for editing this for us every week, and I'm sorry. And I want to not thank John for writing Now Playing, because last week's script was terrible, and I'm sorry.
Fo-fo-de-fo-fo-de-fo!
Great. And on that, I'm going to introduce our end music, which is the first one we've taken from listeners. And this one is from the forum user from Nintendo World Report Forum's Top Hat Ant, and it is, appropriately, the end theme from Super Mario Land. Night, everybody.
Night.
Bye. Ha 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 ha.